one really amazing thing about a standard is, let's say there's nothing that really can support it. There's no code or standard out there that says, hey, how to do something. We have consensus on something. We could actually have that approved in the standard because it's a consensus document.
Welcome to the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast, the show where you learn how to plan, build, and live the tiny lifestyle. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and this is episode 296 with Janet Thome. Janet is deeply involved in the tiny house movement, leading the Tiny House Alliance USA, and serving as the membership secretary of the ASTM International Tiny House Subcommittee. In this episode, Janet will share insights into the current state of the tiny house market, the impact of recent economic shifts, and the ongoing efforts to develop standards that ensure safety, affordability, and compliance in the industry. She'll also discuss the importance of certification for owner-builders and the essential role of inclusive regulations. Join us as we deep dive into these topics and explore the future potential of tiny house living with Janet Thome. But before we get started, did you know that I personally send Tiny House newsletter every week on Tuesdays? It's called Tiny Tuesdays, and it's a weekly email with tiny house news, interviews, photos, and resources. It's free to subscribe, and I even share sneak peeks of things that are coming up, ask for feedback about upcoming podcast guests, and more. It's really the best place to keep a pulse on what I'm doing in the tiny house space and also stay informed of what's going on in the tiny house movement. To sign up, go to thetinyhouse.net/newsletter, where you can sign up for the Tiny Tuesdays newsletter. And of course, you can unsubscribe at any time. I will never send you spam. And if you ever don't want to receive emails, it's easy to unsubscribe. So again, that's thetinyhouse.net/newsletter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy next week's Tiny Tuesdays newsletter. All right, I am here with Janet Thome. Janet is the founder, president, and treasurer of Tiny House Alliance USA. Janet has led the Tiny Houses initiative leading to the final approval of a new ASTM International Tiny House Subcommittee, E06.26, within the E06 Performance of Buildings Committee. The Tiny House Subcommittee will develop and maintain standards specific to the tiny house industry indefinitely. Janet Thome is the membership secretary of the E06.26 Tiny House Subcommittee as well. Janet, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ethan. Thanks for the opportunities to speak about an update for ASTM. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And I definitely want to get into those updates, but you know, it's been a couple of years since you've been on the show. So I thought we could just start off by kind of reviewing, catching me up for anyone who's maybe hearing this for the first time. You know, what is ASTM and what is the, you know, what is this tiny house subcommittee all about?
In the simplest of terms, ASTM International is one of the largest standard developers in the world. And what they do is basically they give industries a way to come together with their technical experts and forge a direction that the industry sees fit for their industry that doesn't have standardization. And to begin, I think it's important to know what standardization is. If you look around you, things that work out and work well is they're standardized. How we do an email, how we fax somebody, how we download a movie, just the simplest things, how a car is built, how an RV is built. So we are coming together with our technical experts and we create consensus documents, which basically means we agree upon a way that it can be done. And what ASTM's role is they're the publisher of the standard. They don't interfere with our development and say, oh, no, that's not a fit, because they're not the experts in our field. We are. And so we're recruiting engineers and architects and consumers and insurance providers and anybody that has this touches this industry and will affect their lives because of the documents that we publish. It's very important that they get involved on some level to be a part of our, you know, this exciting opportunity. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say something that you pointed out to me when we spoke earlier is just that you know, the ASTM develops standards for the entire world rather than just for one country right. or another country. And I think that's
they're called ASTM International. And so that means there's 150 countries that have the possibility, I think it's actually gone up to 155, mm-hmm. that have the opportunity to contribute, to be a part of our standard development. What's also very helpful to know is once a standard is published, it can be amended. So for instance, if the country doesn't like mm-hmm. something in it, they can amend it to adapt to their country as well.
Okay.
We had a very exciting meeting with the editors of EO6, and we learned a lot more about how to do definitions and how to reference other standards, because we can reference, we're not going to reinvent the wheel here. Mm-hmm. All over the world, the standards already exist how you build houses. How do we come together and make it simplified? What we want to do is make it simplified enough to the builders actually want to build to it. You know, I mean, we've always had this dream of doing what is called perhaps an ANSI plus. You know, the builders all build to that ANSI 119.5 standard. But because it's an RV standard, it's not really sufficient for housing. Mm-hmm. And all the builders exceed that standard. But because it's closed construction and no one's really truly knows behind the walls, that's one thing why we need the standards. So people know, get everyone on the same page, basically. Standardization gets everybody on the same page. The building official, the third-party agency, the manufacturer, the consumer, we're all on the same page. It's okay, this is how we do it. You know, and we want to do the minimum requirements. And of course, the builders, they want to exceed the requirements. That's up to them as well. What's exciting about ASTM is they do standards on every imaginable industry that you could think of: commercial space flight, cannabis, 3D printing, 3D printing houses. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sustainability standards for like hemp, aircrete.
Yep.
There's straw bale, any type of green building, toys for kids.
Got it. Right. So they regulate or they create standards for a lot of different industries, right. not just buildings. And they're kind of, sounds like they're the neutral arbiter, or they bring stakeholders who are experts together to create the standards.
Right.
And they kind of maintain and publish them. I'm curious.
Oh, well, ASTM's job is to do is to make sure we follow mm-hmm. the ANSI essential requirements for due process. Mm-hmm. Which that means is there's a lack of dominance by one industry, one person, or, you know, someone who shows superior strength or knowledge that could actually come over and take over the direction of it. Mm-hmm. It's a very fair process where everyone has a vote and every voice matters.
Interesting.
And their mission is to make it a safer world.
Nice.
And so, and besides lack of dominance, it's open to the public. Everyone, no one can be denied to be on the committee or to be involved. And I like that part. Mm-hmm. And it makes it very important because, you know, people sometimes, you know, we have a world around us a lot of times and things are happening and we're not paying attention. And then suddenly we like, oh, wow, we have laws we don't like. There's things that are around us that because we didn't participate, there you go. And you have to go by that. So this is a unique opportunity, a very exciting opportunity that we're going to make history to develop standards that actually benefit our industry and to keep it affordable. Keeping it affordable is one of the key focuses that we have, because I want to support small manufacturers, the owner builders, and that is key. How do we address that? And that's very, very important to me and to a lot of people that are involved.
So when we last spoke, you were deeply involved in starting to develop these new global building standards. I believe the committee had been approved. But can you update us on the progress you've made since then?
We actually have a subcommittee. We have a subcommittee, not a committee. We did have a committee, but then we ended up getting a subcommittee. But we're under a committee of the performance of building. And that committee has been around for 75 years. And they have all the expertise and every building material that you can imagine that goes into a building. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing is it's none of us have done this before. It's brand new to all of us. And we are gathering the engineers. We're gathering the architects. We just spent $10,000 for a structural engineer. We raised the money for him, this incredible architect, to develop mm-hmm. tables for the dead and live loads for a chassis. And it's very important, you know, different sizes. Mm-hmm. And we're very pleased with that. So we've been recruiting the great stakeholders, the technical writers. We are in draft mode. Once we have a draft, then we'll create the task groups where everyone can come in and say, I'd like at this, or that doesn't work, and have a conversation about, okay, this doesn't work for me, or could you add this, and get some consensus before it goes to ballot. So we are developing standards on tiny house on wheels. Mm-hmm. We have a standard that is microgrid utilities, how tiny houses can be hooked up in a utilities in a cottage development. We have a standard developed that's under for tiny house communities. Uh-huh. We have certification. Certification is so important. And also to keep it affordable, we have got some great technical writers that are in the third-party industry that are helping us with that. Robin Butler with NOAA, he's going to do a whole section on remote view, and certifying the owner builders. It's very important that the owner builders find a way, you know, to have a label on their tiny home. Mm-hmm. A couple of the standards I'm very excited about, I think probably will maybe the first one that will come out first, is it's covering all the structural attachment.
Yes.
All of it, from the walls, the trusses, the rafters, and how that is attached to the chassis. And the floor systems, we're going to try to do like 4 or 5 different methods. We're talking to all the builders because we don't want a builder to feel stuck. Oh, that's how I have to. We don't want that. We realize that a lot of different builders build the floor system in a different manner. And we're trying to acknowledge that. So we've created figures and we're talking to all the manufacturers, because sometimes we have to go to them. Everyone's so busy, they don't have a lot of time to participate. So we often just go to them and, hey, how do you do it? We want to make sure that we include your method in the standard. We are going to address chassis systems as well. To the level, we'll mm-hmm. stop at the level and probably do commentary that will include NHTSA. NHTSA is the equivalent of NHTSA. That's the road regulations for trailers. Mm-hmm. The chassis, the trailer part is considered a vehicle. So in the U.S., you have to build them to the federal motor vehicle standards. And so we want to do commentary. Commentary is basically, put that as an appendix. So commentary is discussion, basically, about the standards and some references to guide people.
Okay.
If you're a trailer manufacturer, a great organization to join is NATM, which is the National American Trailer Manufacturer. If you want to manufacture trailers, a great, great, great organization to join, because they teach you how to get your World Manufacturer ID number and to join NHTSA, and just follow the, it's very, very important for builders to know this path. And so we're going to include that. And Canada has an equivalent. Australia has an equivalent. So we'll be including that. Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to create a section for the anchoring systems, you know, at the minimum level and foundations. So why I love this standard is because it's kind of the missing part that you could actually build a tiny house to Appendix Q as well and any building codes in the world. So it's the missing, when the building officials want to see plans for tiny houses, what they always want to know is, how is it attached? How is that safely attached? Because when that tiny house on the wheels is driving down the road, you're in hurricane winds. And there's methods already in place. We don't have to reinvent the wheel here. The HUD code addresses a lot of ways that manufactured home is safe. And so we're not reinventing the wheel. We're just gathering the information that already exists. But one really amazing thing about a standard is, let's say there's nothing that really can support it. There's no code or standard out there that says, hey, how to do something. Mm-hmm. We have consensus on something. We could actually have that approved in the standard because it's a consensus document. Mm-hmm. I think obviously we have to, if that's something that's that could be used as something that didn't mean to, like, if there was something that wasn't safe, for instance, obviously we're going to have to address safety, fire safety, structure safety with codes and standards that already exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but the HUD code is 88 reference standards. So we have a lot to glean from. And we obviously want to meet and exceed the HUD code, what IRC references. Mm-hmm. So this can be a standard that everyone respects and that they can use. And this is the standard that also has the tables from the structural engineer. So I think this could...
Mm-hmm. So once those like, are you mentioned the structural engineer creating the tables for live load, is that available now for just somebody who wants to kind of use that in their build, or will that be available at some point for, you know, an individual person who wants to build?
I'll tell you it's going to be copyrighted. It's in a draft form. Like I said, we spent $10,000 on it. Mm-hmm. And so once it's goes to the task group and it's uploaded into the ASTM,
right.
It's considered copyrighted by ASTM.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that will be available through ASTM. And obviously, but what you could do is he based it on the 2022 ASCE SEI standard. You know, that's the loads for structural buildings. So he based it on that. So that, and there's also something that's free called the hazard tool. It's free. It's called the hazard tool. And you can put in your address and learn all the, mm-hmm. all the requirements for all your loads right there. So it's pretty amazing tool. So there's a lot of free things out there. And we're going to be doing a lot of commentary on that in the standard as well to help support people. I think that is one of the most important things we're seeing is not enough axles on tiny houses. This whole base standard is based on what we've seen mm-hmm. in the industry that needs further regulation, further quality control. For instance, the floor system, there's people that build tiny houses and they end up getting mold. Well, there's methods to prevent that.
Uh-huh.
In the standard, and we're addressing that with our. And I'm very excited because the standard that we're working on, I've recruited Simpson Ties, and everyone builds Simpson, and Simpson Ties is going to help us with that. And a great company called MyTech, they have amazing expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And another company I'm really excited about is a foundation system called Central Piers, and they have this. They're also helping us, and it's a foundation system that's very simple. And they're steel piers that you put on a cement mm-hmm. block, like a precast concrete block. And they have pre-drilled holes.
Okay.
And this is accepted like in all the states. And so mm-hmm. their technical people are going to help us, which I'm very excited. Maybe give us some diagrams. That would be the starting like minimum level for foundation. Because one thing I think we're doing different too is we're going to be addressing foundations that are for permanent homes and for temporary. And why this is important, I feel, to deal with foundations for temporary. The state of Colorado, I think, as you know, they have a new rulemaking for tiny homes on a chassis. And one of the requirements is a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And they do allow, you know, a temporary or permanent foundation. Mm-hmm. And it's very exciting and hooked up to utilities. And believe it or not, there is going to be tax that they have to go through a process as real property. Usually any kind of movable, it can be, but they have to go through, like I said, they have to go through the tax process, but usually any kind of chattel or movable unit is not ever considered real property. It's considered personal property. So I think we're going to see a lot more requirements of simple foundations for tiny houses. I think something also like the country can decide itself, is this a building or is this going to be a vehicular unit?
Mm-hmm.
Which will have different regulations. If it's just, you know, like, for instance, a vehicular unit would have a title and a VIN number, where if it was a building, it would have a perhaps a insignia with a serial number from the third party. So we're trying to make it open-ended. We're trying to address the fact that some people might want to live in Arizona half the year and half the year in Washington State, for instance. And so they want to travel and they want to be able to have it permanent. I do think that we're going to see a lot more acceptance if we start getting away from the RV standards and building them to the building codes instead of just the RV standards. Though I do feel, and I want to suggest to anybody that's an advocate, to advocate for all paths of acceptance, because, like, for instance, a perfect example, the state of Colorado has new rulemaking for tiny houses on wheels. But not one manufacturer signed up for the program, not one. And it went into effect July 1st, 2020, 3, I believe. And so there was a dilemma in this one city in Bayfield, Colorado. And so there was a community that was right in the middle of this issue. Like, okay, so they have a PUD plan development and for Tiny Home Village, and they were trying to get compliant with the state. But how can you get compliant when you already have a PUD that says one thing? So I'm very excited about the solution that they created there. They can either build to the state plan, mm-hmm. or they allow a tiny home as a recreational vehicle, but they want you to dress. They have a snow load of 51 pounds. You have to have third-party certification and an electrical inspection and registration with your trailer and get a CO from the city, and you're good to go permanently. And that county, La Plata County, also has two methods for tiny houses. With the RV route, if you're there past 90 days, you have to follow the land use code, or built to Appendix Q and the IRC. So I think it's very important for all of us not to include or to leave out acceptable methods. There is a city in Idaho that adopted the NOAA ANSI Plus standard. Mm-hmm. And what they basically did was they added the what needed to be addressed for their climate. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, at like ICC right now, they're developing standards that will be modular. That's one method. I think at ASTM, I think that how it will turn out, I can't speak for all of us, because how it will turn out will be developed by all of us and agreed upon. But I see that it could be a new classification of housing, something brand new, not a modular, not a manufactured home, not an RV. There's a HUD approved document that I just ran into that was HUD approved it, but they didn't write it. And why I'm excited about it is it described tiny houses separate from modular, separate from manufactured homes, separate from RVs, separate from the old mobile home definition. And why that's exciting to me. And they said it was 400 square feet or less, either on wheels or on foundation. But they did say that there's no universal acceptable, you know, one definition for it. And so, and why the document was created was to guide housing counselors to know the difference between housing. So when I saw that, I was very excited, because it just gives us an opportunity to create something new. Because if you think about it, I mean, modular manufactured homes, they've got established industries for decades. So if you have to follow the laws in the states.
Right. Yeah. Why is it important to you that the tiny home standards are separate from modular?
I don't mind, because not everyone has a different level of how they build. Some builders are small. They might build 1 to 3 to 6 a year. Some build to scale. They have a factory and they build 15 at a time. So we have all these different levels of how you build.
Yeah.
If you look at how modular construction, you have to have your factory certified 100%. What does that mean? Well, that means that you have to have that entire, sometimes the first or the second one approved, and that could be costly. So I'm not against modular construction. I'm for every single method that fits the manufacturer.
Got it.
Because as you can imagine, there's all kinds of different levels of, there's huge companies involved. There's huge companies and small companies. And I really want to protect the heart of the industry. To me, are small manufacturers and owner builders.
Yeah.
But what I'm also seeing, even though I'm a part of bringing this to more of a regulated industry, I still want to embrace all methods of how we get there legally. And I support all methods.
Yeah.
We're never going to see tiny houses on wheels built to RV standards go away. I don't think that's always going to be a given. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like I still want to support that, because all the jurisdictions really have to do is say, okay, we'll accept that it's built to the RV standards, but address their climate issues, address their trust issues if they have, their seismic issues. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I was so pleased with the Bayfield, Colorado permit. I have to show it to you, Ethan. I think you'd be incredibly impressed by it, because it's simpler than I even thought it was going to be. And this was months and months of discussion. Mm-hmm. In fact, they were trying to get someone to recertify a certified company, a company that was already certified, and not give them a CO. And it was kind of all the wrong direction of how to get compliant with the state. And, you know, we kind of kept telling them, you know, how can you get compliant with the state with no manufacturer signed up for it? So it's very important that we really, really keep in mind the different levels and the different financial capabilities that these manufacturers have. And I want to support our small manufacturers. Absolutely not against modular construction.
Right.
But not everybody can attain, not everybody has a factory, right?
Right, right. How does, how do the ASTM standards, or how would they help address affordability? Because that's something that you've mentioned a couple times too.
Well, I think certification needs to be at a certain level. I actually had a standard that reinstated called ASTM E541 a few years ago. It's a standard that is, it's for the compliance assurance agencies, or actually third parties that certify a manufactured type building. HUD has referenced it for 40 years. California ACD references it. There's 10 more states that reference it, including Illinois, Virginia, Georgia, Minnesota, North Dakota, New Jersey, Rhode Island. And it's very important. Why? Is because, okay, if there's more requirements for third parties and they have to spend a lot of money for accreditation and get audited and get accredited, that could be another $10,000 to $15,000 a year. You know, that, and that cost gets passed down to the manufacturer, and then it gets passed down to housing. And so that is, I'm at the forefront of the keeping this affordable. And so the standard, the certification standard that we're working on, ASTM, will start at the level of ASTM E541, which is, it's pretty exciting standard. I mean, this standard, it's got everything in it. When I had it reinstated, I talked to John Westphal at California ACD, and he said, Janet, it's got everything in it that you need. And so, but there's a push to me that I see at the same time that we really need to address affordability, that there's more requirements and more requirements that aren't necessary when ASTM E541 already works.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's very interesting is ASTM E541 is a statutory requirement in many states. So it's in state law that it's accepted. So it was mistakenly withdrawn. And because the experts of that committee weren't there anymore, and I happened to notice it, and at the same time I went to ASTM, I said, that the standard has got to be reinstated. And so I gathered all the great third parties of the industry, and we reinstated it. And I'm very excited because like Virginia is the first state that's adopted the new ICC standard 1205 and 1200.
Yeah.
But the great news is they still accept the ASTM E541 accreditation. And in fact, it supersedes any adopted codes and standards because it's in state regulation. So that to me is a great win for affordability in tiny houses.
Nice.
And once again, like you're going to see if modular construction, often like the state programs, they require you have a factory. I mean, and a lot of strict, not all states are strict like that. Not all states will, you know, micromanage the type of factory that you build in, but a lot of them do. And to me, of course, you're going to have that factory certified.
Yeah.
And so that to me is a cost. Now, believe it or not, it's harder to get a HUD factory certified. You can also, you know, build to the manufactured home standard. I'm 100% for every single path there is that addresses your need, your financial capabilities, and a way for us all to get housing. And I think it's very important that we all work together as an industry and we're inclusive of all methods.
Yeah. So what's, I mean, this is going to sound like a cynical question that, but I it just popped into my head and I wanted to ask it, which is, you know, what's to stop like the manufacturers who are getting involved in this process from basically just helping to create standards that make sure that people have to use their products?
Well, first of all, you cannot use product names in a standard.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, recently I mentioned, you can't say, oh, you must use Simpson.
So like central peers can't say like, oh, well, the only safe way to, you know, attach your tiny house to the ground is with central peers.
No, cannot. Now, okay. Cannot. But I'm excited about his product because, okay, it means his foundation system will be, okay, like $1,600 as opposed to $5,000. Well, I think for an owner, that is a efficient savings. And the reason I mentioned
that... Would those work for a tiny house on a trailer?
They will. They would not be... Modular doesn't allow augers, usually, but manufactured homes do. But because I feel like we're creating a brand new classification of housing that's not tied to modular, not tied to manufactured homes, I hope that this is going to be acceptable. I mean, the RV foundations are allowed in the Colorado rulemaking. You can have, there's like three different types. So, and I really appreciate that they're offering more than just one method. I think that's going to help us a great deal to have more than one method. So no, we cannot, even though I mentioned Simpson ties, the only reason I mentioned them is I think every single builder uses Simpson ties, right? But we can't say you must use Simpson ties. No, not at all. You're not allowed to mention any kind of brands in the actual standard itself.
Okay.
This is the material that you use, basically.
Got it.
Now, we are allowed to include, for instance, commentary that would include a reference to perhaps Simpson Ties, a great white paper that they wrote. Because, I mean, I'm just excited about their expertise. In fact, they're going to go visit one of our builders in Texas to see how they do it, you know? So this is the beauty of ASTM. Okay, we have 150 members. Everyone has a vote, but let's say five people from one company came in, they had one voting interest. And they cannot come in and dominate. That's the beauty. That's what I really appreciate ASTM. No one can come in and dominate. This is how it has to be, and you have to use my product.
Right.
That's absolutely not allowed. Yeah.
So I have the sense that the majority of my listeners are individuals who are either looking to buy a tiny house at some point, or maybe they're considering building their own tiny house, but they're individuals. They're not companies.
Yeah.
You know, what is your hope for people listening to this interview who are kind of individuals who aren't necessarily experts in tiny homes, aren't going to necessarily join the committee? You know, what's your hope for those listeners from this conversation?
You know, they can also, you know, reach out and have a conversation with us, you know, and tell us their concerns. Because one thing I'm extremely concerned about that I'd like to mention is all the fraud that's on Facebook right now with the fake builders using other people's photos. And if I want to tell the listeners to, if you see a rent to own, run. And we are seeing, and do not send a wire transfer to anybody.
Yeah.
A lot of the people come to me that have been ripped off. And they, and people, one important way to find out, is this a legitimate builder, is you do an image, you save the image, you go to the camera icon with Google, and you find the original source, and you'll find out where that picture came from. Because what we're seeing, I know the builders like my heart, because I mean, I know their looks, right? And there's builders out there that are, they're fake builders. They're not even builders. And they're not even building anything. They don't even have a factory. They're just pretending that there's something. It is so bad. I'm sure you've seen it, Ethan. But it's taking over Facebook right now. And the groups are the scammers are the admins. They're starting these groups, especially if you see, okay, tiny houses under $30,000. Tiny houses under $25,000.
Yep.
So I would say for a tiny house person that wants, they want to have a tiny house, verify. And there's so many pioneers in this industry that have been around, tried and true. And don't be fooled by websites either. Unfortunately, they are cloning the websites as well.
Wow.
This one scammer is actually trying to rent the first tiny house Wind River built and for $1,500, and it was sold how many years ago? Right. You know, and they don't even stop doing it is terrible out there. So
wow.
I think that everyone needs to take a deep breath before they buy anything. It's a buyer's market right now.
Is it?
It really is. I mean, I don't know if you know this or not, but last year was really tough, you know, because when COVID was around.
Last I knew the demand was just off the charts for tiny houses, and you couldn't get one.
It's okay. That was during COVID.
Oh.
But what happened is when inflation went sky high and one bank we had, that Liberty Bank, they went from a 20% down payment to a 40% down.
Mm.
And then the builders are dealing with material costs that's gone sky high. And so last year, a lot of orders came to a screeching halt.
Wow.
And in certain, because it was kind of, but now I'm seeing, a new trend. Where people, okay, I think they see this as a new norm and they're starting to buy again. But there were some manufacturers, unfortunately, that closed their factories and went to site build. because, you know, they stopped no matter what they did. And if you notice too, Ethan, the prices have increased. And of course, if you look at that increase and you balance it with those cheap ones that the scammers are selling, it looks very imbalanced. Because I mean, how many years ago you could $50,000 was high for a tiny house, and now we're talking we're at 120, 150, $200. How can the consumer do that? So I'm hoping that we'll see a trend to smaller ones. But even the manufacturer that did smaller ones were having a trouble. But like I said, I feel like there's a trend right now this is a new norm. Okay, they know the interest rates are high, and you know they're like, it's kind of like when we go to the grocery store right now, right? Okay, so meat's $5 more, and you deal with it, and you just do it anyway. But I think the consumer that is wanting to buy a tiny house, slow down and really protect yourself. Really know who your builder is. Ask others.
Yep.
Just because there's nothing on Better Business Bureau, it means nothing.
Got it.
Just because there's nothing on Yelp, that means nothing. You want somebody. And if you are on Facebook and someone says DM me, a true builder will say, "This is my website.
Yeah.
This is my building facility, and you can come see me. This can be verified." And verify. And like I said, do not send a wire transfer. They are not protected.
Got it.
I know someone who sent a scammer $10,000, and it was the same bank. It was Chase to Chase. They did not guarantee that the man said he could get it. Yeah, yep. She never got it back. They don't. And I know someone else. We're seeing a lot of cloning of websites. And I know someone who got a scam $25,000. So,
ouch.
It is a buyer's market, and also consumers buy where you're close to. I mean, transport is going to be a huge factor. Yeah.
It's a huge cost. It's very expensive to get a house transported.
It really is. So you're really wise to pick a local builder. You can go visit and verify who they are. And the transport cost will be like when I got one of my tiny, it was 120 miles. So it was fantastic. I think my delivery was like less than $500. How exciting.
Yeah.
But we're talking about if you go across the country, I mean, it's going to be $20,000. Very smart to pick your builder local. Yeah. You can verify him local, him or her locally. That's important to me.
Well, one last question for you. You know, what do you envision for the future of the tiny house movement, kind of in light of the ASTM work that you're doing?
I feel like it's going to change the world. I really do. And even though there's a standard development going on with ICC, which I support, is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's modular construction. It's one type of construction. I feel like we're going to create a new classification of housing. That's my end goal. That's my hope. And we need more people involved that have expertise. If you're a consumer, tell us what you want.
Mm-hmm.
They can join and be a voting member.
Yeah.
You know, it's open to anybody. And we're just trying to create a safer product. But the last thing I'd like to say is, you know, if you're involved in this and you're an advocate, please include and be inclusive of every method that is out there. Because I think that's the last thing I'd like to say, because it's very important for us all to acknowledge the work of others and not work against the work of others, and acknowledge all levels.
Nice. Well, Janet Thome, thank you so much for being a guest, for coming back on the show. I appreciate the update, and I'm excited to get this one out there.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ethan. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much to Janet Thome for being a guest on the show today. You can find the show notes for this episode, including a complete transcript and links and resources, over at thetinyhouse.net/296. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/296. Don't forget to follow the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast for more insights and conversations like this. By following the show, you'll receive each new episode every Friday when it drops. And if this episode resonated with you, please share it with friends, family, or anyone who might find value in the world of tiny houses. Well, that's all for this week. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast.